Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political views, or events, I should say. Today is Tuesday, June 6th, 2023. Howdy ho, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy Gardening Exercise Day.
Ooh.
Yes. Yeah. What, exercise or gardening?
Exercise.
June 6th encourages to maximize the health benefits of gardening. So today we're encouraging people of all shapes and sizes to get off the couch and tend their gardens and flower beds while getting some fresh air and sunshine. Gardening is a natural way to exercise. It involves a lot of walking back and forth, as well as bending and stretching, working on those quads and glutes. So get out there, whether you're weeding, digging, spading, planting, pruning, mowing, raking, or walking, tend to your garden. Plus, you got some vitamin D out there if you got some sunshine. And wherever you are, whether the sun's actually shining or not, you're getting some vitamin D through the clouds. Might be getting some ultraviolet radiation as well through the ozone holes, but hey, who's counting? Anyway, I've already spent my hour in my garden today.
What's this stuff about holes in the ozone? Are you kidding me there, buddy?
That's what I hear. That's what I hear.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's all due to those cows, nasty cows, right?
Oh, my. That methane gas, I'll tell you. Well, I'm feeling great, even if my vegetables and zinnias aren't.
You know, it is weird. We're getting a lot of that air from the north, and I'm wondering if that doesn't have some impact on our plants, because mine just, the things that I planted outside, just don't seem like they're, some are really looking good and others are kind of iffy, and I wonder if that doesn't have something to do with it. Certainly an air issue warning has, air warning has been issued for a lot of states as we're getting the pollutants from the fires and up in Canada. So I don't know. I don't know if that would or not. So anyway, let's go ahead and get to the gold prices today. It's struggling to stay where we're at, $1,964. Silver, $2,236. Platinum, up 4 and 1,044, and palladium up 2, 1,444. The USDX today was up 0.13 at 104.14. There you see the struggling with gold today. Crude oil was down 64 cents at 71.51. The U.S., let's go to the Dow. The Dow was up 10 points. It was all over the page today, but it did manage to be up 10. The S&P was up 10, and the NASDAQ was up 46. Woohoo! A big day. Big day in the paper markets. European markets, pretty much the same thing, barely moved. Not sure what they're all waiting for. Can't believe they'd all be waiting for Powell. Still got a ways to go, I guess. Asian markets, Nikkei again was barreling upward 289 points. 10-year yield was down 3.68. Natural gas was the only one higher today in the oil sector, and that was up less than 1% at 2.54. I know this isn't on your radar, Dave. I don't think it is. I didn't see it. But today, the PGA Tour agrees to merge with the Saudi-backed rival LIV Golf. You know, and everybody says, you know, it was just a matter of time. But, you know, it just seems, I don't know.
Icky.
You know, it's just, I mean, yes, there were lawsuits and on both sides and so forth. It's like no one stands up anymore for principle. And I don't know if this was a matter of principle or not. It just seems like something, and golf is not just American, you know, but it just seemed like the PGA was just, you know, the beginning, the refusal, they stood up, the Saudi-backed LIV couldn't get any TV deals done, you know, so you couldn't follow them. And then you had one LIV pro win a tournament, and it all changes after that. It's just, and then they shouldn't have been allowed. They should have stuck to their guns and see who would have folded first. But I guess that really did have a huge impact, the LIV on the PGA. And again, folks, it all comes down to money. There is no such thing as principle when it comes down to money. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. It just,
I'll be curious to see what two of the biggest critics of the LIV tour we'll have to say about this merger, Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. They were very staunch opponents,
yeah,
of the alternate tour. So didn't see anything today. I'm sure it's largely, if not all, spin. I think as some of the players are interviewed, unless there's some kind of gag order that's going to be imposed by the PGA, I think we'll start to see some breaking of the ranks pretty soon.
I think I read where they're not going to release. I don't know. I don't know if it was a gag order per se, but I don't know. It's just interesting. Now just another something that the Saudi Arabia, you know, they own part of us. Another, it'd be interesting. I'm assuming the PGA is licensed, is business in the United States. I don't know if they're.
Oh, yeah, they're, yes, they're, I think.
It's a U.S. corporation.
Based in, I think, a corporation based in Florida.
Yeah. So here, just another corporation owned by, you know, it's just amazing. It just is. Anyway, I will go ahead and get off of that since I'm just a little.
What, you didn't shoot par today, Melody?
No.
Sorry, you so out of, been out of shape.
Yeah, it's been a while. I did hit one part. Yeah, but anyway. But anyway, it's just, Would you believe I lost? Why don't you go ahead and start, Dave? Because my paperwork just disappeared from my screen.
Well, other news coming out of Washington today from the World Bank, who is reporting or predicting that higher interest rates and fallout from the recent banking crisis is going to drastically slow economic growth for the world's biggest economies. The bank said that advanced economies like the U.S., Japan, and the euro area are expected to grow by only 0.7% in 2023, down from 2.6 collectively a year ago. The U.S. is projected to grow 1.1%, while the euro area and Japan are projected to see GDP growth of less than 1% this year. And next year, growth here in the U.S. is expected. They expect to decelerate to 0.8% as high interest rates further weigh on growth. Bank estimates overall global growth will decelerate to 2.1% in 2023, down from 3.1% last year. Now, emerging and developing economies are forecasted to see a slight uptick in GDP to 4%. Up 0.6 from the bank's projection made back in January. But World Bank chief economist Indermit Gill says that excluding China, growth in developing economies will be less than 3%. Hmm. There you have it.
Yeah, well, it marks one of the weakest growth rates in the last five decades, Dave.
Yeah, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, you would think, but yet everything is up and rosy, and it doesn't seem to matter. We've just adjusted, right?
Yeah, we seem to adjust pretty well, pretty regularly, don't we?
Yeah, it seems that way. Seems that way. But we can go on and talk about the Walmart. Walmart doesn't seem to be fazed by Amazon's, I got to hand it, Amazon's massive logistics empire. So Walmart believes they found a solution to making its existing store network double as online fulfillment centers. The big league race in retail shifted, of course, during the, after 2020. Today, as more customers demand delivery and in-store pickup, Walmart has been developing ways to increase the number of online orders that it can fill within its stores and, of course, at the speed at which it can do, and while reducing the need for workers to clog its aisles. The retail giant showed off its first ever market fulfillment center in Bentonville, Arkansas, and that was just last week. Similar to sorting systems that some reporters observed as a key Amazon fulfillment center, Walmart's smaller in-store warehousing platform actually involves an Alphabot. And that moves along stacked shelves of inventory, Dave.
Well, that term scares me, Alphabot. It's a robot with an alpha personality? Yikes. Yeah, I know. But talking about, Walmart, two people per station, sometimes one. Walmart apparently been testing this platform and training employees on how to use it for about a month now. Walmart topped the Fortune 500 list for the 11th year in a row, while Amazon took the second spot for the fourth year in a row. Now, post-pandemic shopping patterns have swung to favor stores like Walmart's strengths, its dominant physical network of stores and grocery offerings. With more people shopping in stores and spending money elsewhere, online retail sales in the U.S. during the first quarter of 2023 made up 15% of total retail sales, and that's down from a pandemic high of nearly 17%. And with high inflation sticking around, choosier consumers have flocked to businesses offering more of life's necessities than, it'd be nice to have that.
I didn't know this was dragging into a second year.
How about it?
It certainly has been off the radar, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
And
it has.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, okay. And ladies and gentlemen, what we're talking about is the tensions between dock workers and shipping companies. Operations at several West Coast ports were throttled yesterday due to labor stoppages or slowdowns as union contract negotiations between dock workers and shipping companies dragged into a second year. So they're still working. You know, they're I guess they're not striking.
Not officially.
Right. So, I mean, you know, so these kinds of work stoppages have disrupted operations at West Coast ports for months, pushing more shipping activity to the East Coast and raising painfully familiar concerns about supply chain disruptions, which helped upset the economy back in 2020. Contract talks began in May of 2022 between the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, which represents more than 22,000 workers across 29 ports, all the way from Washington State to California, and the Pacific Maritime Association, which represents shipping companies and terminal operators. The union contract covering those workers expired last year in July. So this year, there has been an increasing number of so-called worker actions at the ports, meaning union members fail to show up for work or otherwise slow down operations, leading to sporadic shutdowns. I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah. They point to one example just a few months ago in March. One local union branch stopped staggering worker meal times. The PMA, the Shipping Association, said forced the port to shut down for an hour during the afternoon and in the evening, dinner time. Previous contract had provisions to ensure staggered meal times. The disruptions yesterday were in Los Angeles, Long Beach, and the Port of Seattle. There were also stoppages in Oakland over this past weekend, which relies heavily on the San Francisco Bay. While the economic impact of a day-long work stoppage, they say, is negligible, the drawn-out labor negotiations are putting a little stain on the West Coast port's reputation as a reliable gateway of international trade. And Jack O'Connell, who's an international trade advisor at Beacon Economics, says that accelerating a long-term shift away from the West Coast to the East Coast and the Gulf Coast ports. The parties reportedly ironed out a few issues, even coming to terms on automation of all things, but the thorniest issue remains wages, which workers want more of.
Yeah, that's very interesting. But you know, that's what always amazed me. This is how they actually should do their strikes, because why would you strike when you're striking because you want more money? So let's strike and not get any at all. I don't know. I just never made them. Yeah, but this is a good way to do it. You're getting paid, but you know, you're putting little thorns into their sides to get something accomplished. There's a 136-page complaint that the SEC filed against crypto exchange Binance on yesterday, alleging market manipulation. Securities law violations and fraud can be taken as a template for a future complaint against Coinbase. An SEC case against Coinbase has been expected at least since March, when the exchange revealed it had received a Wells notice from the agency. The SEC had filed earlier complaints against foreign crypto companies for being unregulated securities exchanges and against domestic companies for their staking products, where customers were encouraged to earn interest on their crypto. We now have chapter and verse on exactly how the SEC thinks crypto exchanges are operating illegally. The Binance complaint includes 39 pages detailing how a series of coins, including Solana, Cardano, Polygon, Filecoin, and others, are in fact securities, meaning they can be traded only on a registered securities exchange. And Binance isn't a registered securities exchange, neither is Coinbase, which also lists all those coins and allows its customers to trade them. And I hear the music, so we're going to have to trade this article for some advertisements, and we'll finish it up when we get back. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188 for Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And just briefly, I'm going to touch on this because you really don't know who. And it, to me, it only ratchets the war up. The war drums makes those war drums even louder and louder, bringing in and making this a nasty situation. Yeah, more nasty situation is there was an important dam in Russian-occupied southern Ukraine was blown up today. And it certainly is going to possibly have an issue on the water supply, the resident safety, and also Europe's largest nuclear power plant. So it receives cooling water from the reservoir upstream. So that's the big issue. And of course, Ukraine is blaming Russia. Russia is blaming Ukraine. So you really don't know who is at blame, just like at the pipeline. Eventually it came out who the culprits probably were and so forth. And so we just don't know at this time, but it's an interesting turn of events, especially if it does something to that nuclear plant. So we'll have to keep following that. And I don't know how much power that power plant provides to Europe.
Good chunk.
Is it a good chunk?
Well, a good chunk to Ukraine. I'm not sure what it does else. It's an essential source of energy for Ukrainians.
For just Ukrainians, okay.
Well, I don't know for just, but certainly for them.
Okay, all right. So, important issue, and again, certainly no way to bring an end for talks anyway. Recession, words back into the news, and Mark Zandi of Moody's Analytics, he's the chief economist, said that the Federal Reserve shouldn't risk an economic downturn to lower inflation to the 2% target and will likely pause its interest rate increases this month. The Fed is set to review rates. Their next meeting is June 13th and 14th. And money market prices suggest that the majority of investors expect the Fed to leave borrowing costs on hold next week amid growing concerns about an economic slump. And Dave, I talked a little bit about this yesterday, and I think you wrote about it, and I think it has a lot to do with all of that money and the tightening of that's going to be going on. So I think that's the major reason why they're doing that. But if they do hold it, there's a reason. They're just not doing it because they think that they've got to the point where, you know, they're happy with what's going on. No. There's reasons why they can't, and they'll protect the stock market at all costs.
I mean, you'd like to think that there's a more fundamental reason, other than protecting Wall Street and multinationals.
Really?
It'd be nice to think that, you know, they're pausing because they've had how many? At least 10. Let's be the next one would be the 11th since last March. You know, they're pausing because they've had how many? At least 10. Let's be the next one would be the 11th since last March. And the consensus of research in this area, while, you know, it's certainly not picked, and it's not what I'd even call consistent, but there is a, we'll call it a semi-consensus, that it takes sometimes several months for the cumulative effect of interest rate increases to slow the economy. So I hear what you're saying, and that's likely the case. I'm just holding on to my naivete that, maybe if not a majority, there's one or two FOMC members who are saying, let's just slow down. We might be overstating our importance here.
Yeah, you can't, you know. No, it has everything to do with Wall Street, because even Wall Street's complaining about it's going to be too early for them to, start doing this, to be adding, just start dwindling liquidity. Wall Street says the markets aren't ready, so why they would do it. I mean, no other reason than that.
Well, then you have Zandi who goes on to say that he's confident inflation will fall to the Fed's 2% target by May of 2024, from 4.9% just the other month. That certainly sounds like he's been drinking some good tea. He added, why should the Fed sacrifice the economy to the altar of a 2% inflation target when most Fed officials probably think 3% makes more sense? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if that's even the right question, but...
Well, the funny thing about it is the Fed's 2% isn't our 2% inflation. We'll never pay 2% inflation on anything that we purchase going forward. We never have. So it's just their little dandy 2% who gives a hoot about what the citizens of this country have to pay. And, you know, we continue to talk and see credit cards rising. People are using their credit cards for food, for their essentials that they... So it's, you know, let the Fed get down to the 2% or even their 3% if that's as low as they can go. And how does it really help the people of this country? Does you really believe that the housing... The mortgages are going to drop back down to their rates are going to drop back down to 3% again. They might have to in order to turn this economy around. So I don't know. I don't know, Dave. It's going to be an interesting way in a recession. I mean, we have all these job layoffs. Doesn't seem to matter. We have all these, you know, things closing up, butting their hatches, closing stores, doesn't seem to matter. We've had a retail issue of stores closing, you know, for how long, doesn't seem to matter. At least we're told it doesn't seem to matter. But yet we have the strongest economy for, I don't know, it's just crazy. And maybe I'll have that same tea that that guy was drinking. So, here we go. Consumers facing high asset prices and rising interest rates have a few loan options. None of them are attractive. Buyers of homes or new cars might be better off waiting until long-term mortgage rates come down. But if you go ahead for some other reason, experts say that consumers are either facing taking on big monthly payments or stretching out the loan term to keep the monthly bill down. I mean, heck, you used to have a 3-year loan for your car. Now it's up to 8. But that's been doing it for a long time. New car loans lasting 83-84 months, that's over 6 years, rose to 34% of the market in 2022 and 28% in 2018. A few borrowers are going even longer, with less than 1% of new car loans lasting 85 months or more. And yes, hello, Ira, Executive Director of the National Association of Consumer Advocates. It's a reflection of the world we live in. Yes. Transportation affordability is a significant problem, as is housing. Yes. You're just waking up to that. We've been telling you that for 20 years. We have a housing problem. Good grief. More and more dealers are offering extended loan terms instead of 3 or 4 or 5 years. They're going way beyond that. Yeah. I mean, yeah, when your average cost of your home, of your car is 50 grand, 30, 40, 50, those are averages. You get a little automatic window or something, and all of a sudden it's 100 grand. It's a little bit of an exaggeration. I'm sure you all know that, but you get my point. And housing, they changed the laws, make it easier for lower credit scores to get in and penalize those that work hard to pay their bills on time. I mean, they're scraping the barrel to help to do to keep the economy going. And yet all we hear, doesn't matter what administration, we've got the best economy ever. It's like, you got to be kidding me. Personal loans closed through the lending tree. The median term in May rose to 60 months from 57 months in April and from 54 in March, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the idea of really long loans. I mean, sometimes it can't be helped. I mean, sometimes if there's a purchase or a financing that's so important to you, and, you know, you want a property, whether it's real or personal, and sometimes it may make sense to go with a longer loan. But only if it's a low rate and it's an asset that appreciates over time. Now, one principle applies no matter what the asset, according to Ira Rheingold, Be very wary of extending the life of your loan just to make it affordable in the short term. Big difference there. This particular article goes on to talk about three different tips when considering a loan. I'll just summarize them. First, do the math. Longer-term loans going to end up costing you more in interest, other things being equal. Next, make hard decisions. Buy a less expensive car or house. And three, beware of sliding underwater. Just extending loans further into the future means, well, it increases the time and expense that you could be underwater or owe more than the asset is worth. Beware, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny. I received something from one of my credit card companies. It's the first time that I've seen this in a while, 0% interest. You know, 0% for, I don't know, a couple of years or something like that.
For balance transfers or for new purchases?
Yeah,
that's unusual.
Yeah, and I thought, they're needing the money.
Yeah, really.
They want and need your business. Insurance. It's been a while since we talked about insurance, but you got two major insurers that are pulling out of the California housing market. State Farm announced last week it would stop accepting applications for all business and personal lines of property and casualty insurance, citing inflation, a challenging reinsurance market, and rapidly growing catastrophe exposure. Allstate, another insurance powerhouse, announced in November it would pause new homeowners, condo, and commercial insurance policies to protect current customers. And I'll tell you what, up until last year, I was with Allstate for, 20 years? Their premiums tripled. I was like, bye-bye, Allstate.
We said goodbye to them last year, too.
It's like, doesn't make sense. You think that there's maybe something a little more. California's volatile market aligns with trends across the country where companies are boosting rates, limiting coverage, or pulling out completely from regions susceptible to wildlife and other natural disasters. You got Florida and Louisiana. They struggle to keep healthy insurance markets following extensive damage from hurricanes, Dave.
I have a good friend who's an owner of an Allstate franchise who, recent conversation. When I asked him if his company would requote our car and homeowners for our renewal after we left them a year ago, told me that the payouts from the wildfires, especially because they apparently were overexposed in California, that's one of the problems there. I mean, housing is so stinking expensive. But also in Florida, apparently they had some decent exposure. And, of course, hurricane damage. I don't know about the Midwest and the tornado alley, how exposed they were there. I know less about the State Farm, but my friend did confirm that these natural disasters really putting a damper on things. So if you're think about pulling up stakes and moving out west, ladies and gentlemen, you better do your homework first and make sure, especially if you're going to own your home out there, that you're going to be able to have it insured.
And I know for the areas with flood insurance every year, it's a it's a toss up whether, you know, there's going to be the federal flood insurance available to people that are living on the coast. So it's and who knows what happens when they would take that away. I can't imagine that they would. Unless there's a deeper and darker reason to, you know. So,
yeah, California has over 1 million homes at risk for extreme wildfire, far more than any other state.
Oh. Hey, I hear the music. We're heading into the last break of the program and into the third segment. So please stay with us, and we'll be right back. Going down to take a look at me. Come on, baby. Don't say baby. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client business. This final segment, you know where to get her, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, beware the jackal. In January, IBM CEO Arvind Krishna announced that his company would be slashing about 4,000 jobs, or 1.5% of its global workforce, indicating a larger trend toward automation and cost-cutting measures, especially in the tech industry. Now, fast forward to early last month when Krishna announced a general hiring freeze. Well, he also warned that IBM plans to replace nearly 8,000 jobs with artificial intelligence. He declared the transition to AI will be phased in gradually over the next 5 years, with machines potentially taking up to over 30% of non-customer-facing roles by the end of that period. Melanie and I talked about this on last Thursday's program. This means that workers in finance, accounting, HR, and other back office functions will likely find themselves facing stiff competition from both robots and algorithms. In other words, see you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile. IBM's momentous decision, I think, underscores companies' increasing reliance on automation and AI across various industries, and more importantly, its potential impact on people, on workforces, both here in the U.S. and around the world. The tech sector here in our country, which went on a hiring spree during the pandemic era, announced 97,200 job cuts in 2022. It's a 649% increase over the prior year, according to the consulting firm Challenger Gray and Crispus. Now, with major downsizing also hitting Meta and Amazon, Twitter, Microsoft, and others, it's clear that AI is quickly moving to the verge of bringing on a metamorphosis in tomorrow's workplace. Janine Mancini writes that the writing's been on the wall for some time. Futurists and other analysts have been sounding the alarm for years about AI's capacity to replace human workers. In fact, I guess you could say even decades. I mean, think the Jetsons' diligent and good-natured housekeeper, Rosie. This trend hasn't gone unnoticed by congressional policymakers, with the White House releasing a report in December warning that it's inevitable that some workers will be displaced by AI. Krishna remains bullish and upbeat about the prospects of it in the workplace. He pointed to the technology's ability to free up thousands of hours of labor-intensive tasks in areas like finance, accounting, and HR. In fact, he projects that AI will add a staggering $16 trillion to the global economy by 2030. And therein, perhaps, is the reason for this dire future. Now, how much it will add to the wallets and pocketbooks of Krishna and other multinational CEOs, I guess, remains to be seen. A recent AP survey analyzed by Equilar showed the typical compensation package for chief execs who run S&P 500 companies rose under 1% last year to a paltry median of $14.8 million. That means half the CEOs in the survey made more and half made less than that. It's the smallest increase, though, since 2015. Now, Krishna's 2022 comp package was worth a reported $16.5 million, about 11% over the median. His pay comprised $1.5 million in base pay plus $8.9 million in stock awards and I guess $6.1 million in options and miscellaneous compensation. Not too chintzy, eh? Who knows how much CEO pay will be boosted by advances and cost savings brought on by AI versus how much will be shared by rank-and-file workers. But the prospect and unintended consequences of mass automation indeed loom large. A new study by Too Big to Fail bank economists reveals that up to 300 million full-time jobs worldwide could be affected by this tsunami. 300 million jobs. Think about that. The report suggests that 18% of all work around the globe could potentially be replaced by machines, with the most advanced economies, including the U.S., being hit the hardest. This news certainly suggests a major shift in the way companies, especially big ones, are operating in the digital age. And it's likely that this is only the start of a new normal that we will live to regret as a society if we don't plan, regulate, and even restrict it now. Just this week, more than 400 researchers, professors, executives, and engineers warned in a signed statement of the potential calamities that could result from unchecked advances in artificial intelligence. Published by the nonprofit Center for AI Safety, the single-sentence statement read, quote, "Mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside other societal scale risks such as pandemics and nuclear war," unquote. Yes, AI may increase operating efficiencies and lower costs of doing business, and it may further pad the wealth of CEOs, their C-suite colleagues, shareholders, and boards of directors. It's certainly not looking so good for us working stiffs of the world. Now, a recent flurry of diplomatic activity between the U.S. and China isn't thawing relations between the two powers, despite the emphasis by the Biden administration about cooperation over confrontation on largely economic issues. Over the past month, the top administration officials like CIA Chief Bill Burns, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, and Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo have met with their Chinese counterparts in a bid to restore dialogue after a series of flare-ups, from tech bans to spy balloon allegations. If those meetings were meant to lay the groundwork for a major detente, it looks like a long and winding runway. When Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin recently met his Chinese counterpart Li Shangfu on the sidelines of a security conference in Singapore, the two exchanged a handshake and basic niceties, then used their speeches to snipe about each other's countries. During the same weekend that Chinese and U.S. warships had a close encounter in the Taiwan Strait, perhaps ground zero for all their tensions. If the two top defense officials can't establish a rapport, what does this portend for the broader relationship, particularly amid worries over the costs of an economic decoupling from one another? Dan Tannenbaum, who is a former Treasury official and now partner at Oliver Wyman, said the short answer is stay calm, keep things in perspective. Some of this, he said, is really about optics. You do have a resetting of the world order and a reallocation of trade. But I think both sides recognize how heavily their economies need each other, he added. Both countries feel like they can't lose. But there's really no winning at this point either. Some of the world's biggest businesses also provide some durable connective tissue, like CEOs Jamie Dimon, Elon Musk, recently making pilgrimage to China. And don't forget, the value of trade between the two nations hit a record last year. Firms have no choice but to navigate the stormy relationship. And there might be safety in staying with the pack. Tannenbaum continued, they're not preemptively changing anything in their business, but they want to make sure that they're very much in line with their peers, that they're not moving too quickly to de-risk. But they're also recognizing some of the challenges that exist in the current geopolitical landscape. Hey, our latest American Survival newsletter has once again hit the streets, featuring, as usual, Doug Nolan's weekly Credit Bubble Bulletin blog and Apothecary Herb's Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought on what's happening at medical schools these days. In addition to Melody's weekly financial market recap, I have a piece called Fill Her Up. Yes, now that a debt ceiling deal has been consummated, signed into law, it's time for Uncle Sam, make that Aunt Janet, to refill our bank account. Axios's Kate Marino says it's just another example of the chaos caused by the impasse that started it. With the nation's debt ceiling suspended now until after the 2024 presidential election, it's time for the federal government's well-oiled borrowing machine to play catch-up. And Marino says the incoming deluge could strain the system, akin to a biblical flood inundating a dehydrated Colorado River. Whether the rush of hundreds of billions of dollars of new treasuries into markets will mutate from a mere challenge into serious market disruptions remains to be seen. But with the economy slowing, despite the resilient labor market, and with the banking sector still vulnerable to rising interest rates and depositor runs, the next few months are going to be interesting to watch. The Treasury's general account at the Federal Reserve, that's the government's main checking account, was almost depleted over the last few months. from a peak of $1.8 trillion on July 29, 2020, gradually fallen since then to about $425 billion at the end of last year, to $48.5 trillion as of last year. Reno says government will likely need to issue as much as $1 trillion in Treasury bills over the next 6 months to return the balance to historical norms, plus continue funding day-to-day needs of the government. The Treasury Department reportedly has been preparing for this eventuality, much as it could in the face of a catastrophic default, estimated to begin as early as yesterday, June 5th. A May 3rd press release from the Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee advised that a group of primary dealers estimated that the market could absorb at least $600 billion over the next 3 months, but encouraged Treasury to be responsive to signs of stress in the market. Here's the minutes of that committee meeting. Dealers broadly agreed that there is ample scope to expeditiously increase the bills. Respondents cited record high money market mutual fund assets under management and the more than $2 trillion in the Federal Reserve's overnight reverse repo facility as evidence of a significant demand for short-dated, high-quality liquid assets. Dealers noted that the bill market could accommodate increases across benchmark tenors, but that the largest increase should occur in the shorter maturity bills. The median estimate for how much Treasury could increase bill issuance over the 3 months without causing significant price deviations from fair value was $600 billion, though some estimates exceeded $1 trillion. Treasury debt manager Tom Katzenbach noted that dealers encouraged Treasury to be responsive to potential market-based indicators of stress in the bill market when replenishing its cash balance. Now, Genadi Golden, at TD Securities noted outside of a major crisis like 2008 or 2020, this is going to be the largest issuance of T-bills ever. It's kind of like watching a person walk across a tightrope, added Jim Caron at Too Big to Fail Morgan Stanley. Tightrope, he added, is not without risk, but the walker believes the risks are knowable and can be managed. Chief among those risks, the possibility that the new bills could siphon more money out of a banking system already damaged by massive outflows this year. And that could send banks rushing to raise more cash, pushing up their funding costs and further stressing the system. Karen also said there's an awful lot of money in the short-term markets and in cash that's looking for an outlet, looking for a little bit more yield. As Marino claims, Treasury's going to have to pay up to entice that cash out of the Fed, and those higher yields will effectively tighten financial conditions throughout the economy. But right now, Treasury's just playing catch-up. The lack of supply of T-bills over the last several months probably kept yields lower than they would otherwise have been. Thus, he adds, you never know how much of an impact something's going to have until it's upon you. But I don't think this is going to be the blood sport that people are fearing. Well, we shall see soon enough. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday with Melody. Butch will, well, I'm not sure with Melody yet, but Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks always for production engineer Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for into financial survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a great evening. Bye bye.
And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.